नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, Texts 17, 18, and 19. Canto 3, Chapter 7 is a dialogue between Maitreya and Vidura. Been going on for some time, several chapters previous. From the beginning of the canto, Krishna has just spoken, doesn't give the detail, gives that 11th canto, but Krishna has just spoken Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. Maitreya was hearing. So it's just the three of them in a forest. Krishna then gave both Uddhava and Maitreya some assignment, some service. Uddhava was to go north to Badrinath and there meet up with the devotees of Narayan Rishi and convey what he just heard from Krishna to them. And in that way give Krishna's association. And Maitreya was given the service of expecting very soon Vidura would arrive and similarly impart the knowledge that he heard to Vidura. And then Krishna left. And shortly after Krishna left, sounds like the same day, it doesn't say specifically, but Krishna left in the morning, in the afternoon, there's Uddhava in the forest feeling devastated. Krishna just left. And Vidura appears in the forest. And some dialogue between the two. They go on all night long, and in the morning, Vidura leaves, says, I have some service, I have to go. But besides that, there's someone elder and my superior, at least by age, and that's Maitreya, and you can find him, go that way. He went that way. So Vidura finds Maitreya, some discussion. Vidura asks about creation, so Maitreya explains it. And after hearing about creation, that's where the beginning of the seventh chapter is. Maitreya asks, how is it possible that the living entity, in the presence of the Supreme Lord, because the Supreme Lord is within his heart, how does he become bewildered? How does he become covered by misconception and suffer, or at least appear to suffer, in that misconception? How does that happen? And he gives more details to that question. But that's the foundational question, and then others around it. And so Maitreya explains. It's a core theological question, because if you understand how you got here, you can understand how to get out. So he explains it. It's the potency of the Supreme Lord, and it's an essential part of Vyasadeva's teaching, Shakti Parinamavad, the doctrine of the transformation of energies. So by the Lord's arrangement, even in his own presence, his deluding potency covers the living entity that's paropi, although transcendental. The living entity behaves very non-transcendentally. And consciousness similarly. So, then after describing that in detail, it's very important teaching to understand how bewilderment comes about. He describes the process of removing that bewilderment, and the process is devotional service. And specific is fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord in devotional service. And when that is accomplished, or as that is accomplished, the misconceptions are automatically or thereby removed, and the artificial, unnatural, unnecessary, illusory sufferings of living entity are removed. Several nice metaphors are presented. A metaphor of the moon shining on the surface of water, and when there's a slight wind, it appears that the moon is quivering. But the moon isn't quivering. The water is moving, and the reflection of the moon on the water is moving, but the moon isn't moving. So, similarly, the living entity is not factually changed by any of the quivering-like conditions of material existence. It's nothing to do with us. Although it looks like that's what's happening. Now I'm happy, now I'm sad, and so forth. So, in part, he's explaining that it's necessary that there's knowledge, and with knowledge, detachment, but knowledge and detachment are not sufficient. Because we can know we're not these bodies and still conduct our life as if we are. Because the deluding potency is so strong. Then he says, this is Maitreya speaking, that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead Vasudeva through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment. When the senses are satisfied in the seer supersoul, the Personality of Godhead, and merges in him, this isn't advocating Sayuja Mukti, this is where the senses are so strongly identified with the object, the Personality of Godhead, there's no break, there's no cessation or interruption. It's unbroken devotional service. Abhyavichari Bhakti. When this happens, all miseries are completely vanquished as after a sound sleep. And then emphasis with a subset or one of the parts of devotional service is chanting. So the final statement made by Maitreya is elevating the importance of chanting the names of the Lord. Simply by chanting and hearing of the transcendental name, form, etc. of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one can achieve the cessation of unlimited miserable conditions. Therefore, what to speak of those who have attained attraction for serving the flavor of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet? This is the Bhagavad Mark. Foundational is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, or Krishna Katha, hearing and discussing topics about Krishna. And topics of Krishna are very broad because everything comes from Krishna. So it's discussing things that are descending knowledge, thus in relation to Krishna, even they may be about apparently worldly subject matters, because it's connected to Krishna. So Vidura replies, my ignorance is now gone. I no longer have any doubts. Your words have cleared everything. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. Now, the external energy of the Lord is always moving. So the real problem is identifying with it. Identified with it through the medium of trying to be the enjoyer of it. And it's a very strong tendency, like inextricably strong tendency, because we want to enjoy. And we want to enjoy because we're part and parcel of the Supreme Enjoyer. It's natural for us to want to enjoy. But it's not just want to enjoy, it's want to enjoy in the position of the master of God's energy, or the enjoyer of God's energy, His prakriti. We want to be the enjoyer of His prakriti. Instead of enjoy the position of being the servant of the Purusha, the actual enjoyer. Small thing. But it's difficult to extricate oneself from that once in it. So that's the background for this morning's verse, or verses. So Vidura is appreciating the merit and the efficacy of what he's just heard. Then he describes those who continue suffering. And those that continue suffering are those that are like animals. Their consciousness is so covered that they don't even realize they're suffering. And they're taking, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, they're taking suffering to be happiness and happiness to be suffering. That which is not to be done is to be done. That which is to be done is not to be done. And they're guided by that principle, by the influence of ignorance. So he says, both the lowest of fools and he who has transcended, who is transcendental to all intelligence, meaning material intelligence, enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. Purport. Lowest of fools do not understand material miseries. They pass their lives merrily and do not inquire into the miseries of life. Such persons are almost on the level of animals who, although in the eyes of superiors are always in a miserable life, are unaware of material distresses. A hog's life is degraded in its standards of happiness, which entails living in a filthy place, engaging in sex enjoyment at every opportune moment, and laboring hard in a struggle for existence. But this is unknown to the hog. Similarly, human beings who are unaware of the miseries of material existence and are happy in sex life and hard labor are the lowest of fools. Yet, because they have no sense of miseries, they supposedly enjoy so-called happiness. And then he goes the other direction, the Paramahansas. They know what real happiness is. And then there's everybody else in between. And that's what the verse is addressing. So, the Bhagavatam's message is for the Paramahansas and all those people who are in between. And the animal-like people, they don't pay attention. But the Bhagavatam is composed in such a way that even such people who like stories, they can hear the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam and become gradually elevated and connected to a spiritual understanding. So, human life, there are different things that Prabhupada says about what human life begins when. And one way that sentence is finished is when they begin inquiry. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. The human form of life is meant. And the human form of life begins when we start to inquire, who am I? Where has everything come from? What's the absolute truth? And prior to that, it's being impelled by the senses. And what the senses are being impelled by is attraction for sense objects. And just living one's life like that. Attraction and repulsion to sense objects. Which is subhuman. That's what same thing the insects do and the birds do and the fish do and the animals do and animal-like humans do. No inquiry. What's going on? Why are so just like basic questions? Why is it that everyone wants to be happy and everyone has to suffer? Why is it that everyone wants to live forever and everyone has to die? Why is it that everyone would like people to be nice to them and they're not nice to other people? I mean, just like, why? And it's like, it's everywhere. So without asking such questions, it's animal life. Or unregulated life. So another statement of human life begins when one accepts the regulations of Varnashram. That is, one becomes regulated by the scripture. The scripture regulates our activity. So many times I've heard Prabhupada in lectures say, an animal. If an animal goes along the street on the wrong side or crosses on a red light, the animal doesn't get arrested. They may get squashed, but they don't get arrested. They're not in violation of law because the laws aren't for animals. But people, if they drive on the wrong side of the street or pass through a red light, they're arrested. And they pay a fine, or there's some punishment. Because they're human. So as in human society there's regulation according to state law, similarly according to God's law, there are regulations that are meant for human life. And if one does not voluntarily submit oneself to such regulation, it's animal life. And like an animal suffers, they suffer. But the animal, how much are they understanding that they're suffering? his example here of a hog. Or, you know, dogs. Like this fellow across the street that keeps a big dog and a little dog. You know, it's a dog life. But on the other hand, you know, the people are living like dogs and the dogs are living like kings. The people are out working hard all day long and the dog is home enjoying the palace. Our devotees that do door-to-door book distribution make that comment. You know, and they don't even bother going door-to-door on weekdays because, you know, the king dog is at home. They ring the doorbell and it's woof, woof. Big house, you know, big expensive house. And everybody's off working to maintain the dog that's in the house. But the condition of embodiment is not different, or it's quite similar to the slaughterhouse. Prabhupada calls it an animal go-down. So some pen where they keep the animals. And all those animals, they're going to be slaughtered. And they're just like, you know, chewing grass or eating whatever, you know, just even if they have some apprehension or fear that they're going to be killed very soon, they're not in a position to do anything about it. So they get slaughtered. And essentially, that's what embodied life is. We know that death is going to come today, tomorrow, or 50 years, or 100 years. It's going to come, and there's nothing we can do about it. So, if one doesn't inquire, what can we do about this problem? Death, old age, disease. What's the solution to the problem? We're no better than the animals. It's just a polished form of the same thing. So human life is meant for that inquiry, atato brahma jigyasa, and living regulated life that helps one achieve the realization of the absolute truth. And for those who don't do either one of those, they're in this category where ignorance is bliss. But we know that ignorance isn't bliss. Ignorance is the root of all suffering. So they take suffering to be bliss. What do you do? One of the Prabhupada writes that one of the essential duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly convince the disciple or student that pursuit of material happiness is a program that one should not pursue. It's a miserable circumstance. Saying that, Prabhupada elaborates again and again and again and again and again and again and again what the material condition of life is, so that his students, us hearing from him, could understand we need another program. And we may not be clear what that other program is, but at least, you know, we don't want that one. This verse that we just read, text 17 of chapter 7, says, the lowest of fools don't even know what the pangs of suffering are, although they're suffering. Ignorance is so dense. Ignorance is bliss. I don't know that I'm suffering. It's like, you know, people that are very, very unhappy, so they take to some form of intoxication. It's like zone out. Just dull themselves out so they don't, like, alcoholism is a big cause of alcoholism, is people feel so hurt by some circumstance or circumstances of life that they begin this indulgence of drinking. So they just, their whole metabolism and their brain and their whole being just becomes numb. So associate with the mode of ignorance, and the misery seems to go away, but it doesn't go away. It's still there. It's just another misery on top of that misery. One just becomes dull by that indulgence and intoxication. And it becomes addictive because the pain of material existence is too much. I just drown my sorrow. And other forms of intoxication, just escapism. But it's not, they don't escape anything. They further bind themselves to forgetfulness of their real existence, or bind themselves to illusory existence. Another variety of illusory existence. Most unfortunate. And people that, there's a devotee, I know that his profession is dealing, through medical profession, dealing with drug addiction or different types of addictions. And the inside story is they don't have a clue. The medical profession doesn't have a clue. However, behind heart disease, it's the number two, at least in America, the number two medical profession or section of the medical profession that's most money is spent for something that there's no solution to. Because all they do is they give something that suppresses the symptoms. It's like, you know, medication. It suppresses symptoms. He was describing that they advertise, when they promote their product, some pharmaceutical company is promoting their product and sending out samples to the doctors. Our study shows that there's 78% effectiveness in the first year. He said, what they don't say is what happens after the first year. Because after the first year is suppressing symptoms, but because the lifestyle is still degraded, because the mode of nature is still there, after the first year it's, you know, it's back to where it was. They don't say that because it won't sell their product. In other words, the real remedy is not medication. The real remedy is changing the modes of nature or changing one's lifestyle. But because people aren't ready to change their lifestyle, the problem continues. It's just like cosmetically covers it over for a while, maybe. But there's no cure. It's symptom covering. Which is the essence of what that addiction is all about anyway. The symptom is that they're in a suffering position. So they turn to something that's a habit-forming or addictive of different types. It's not only just drug addiction. It's all kinds of addictions. So even understanding that it's miserable, what Vidura is saying here, there's people that, you know, people that are Paramahansas and people that are like animals that don't even know what's going on. So such persons may have a sense of happiness. And all the rest of the population, that they're in it, this goes back to his question, how does a living entity become covered? Because in the covered condition, they're miserable. There's kleshas, there's sufferings. He's described, he's heard from Maitreya, rather, described that the mitigating process is devotional service. And that the essence of which is hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. So he says, text 18, but my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. And text 19, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. So, in the form of appreciation, Vidura is adding to what Maitreya said. Because Maitreya said the mitigating process is devotional service. And now he's attributing his relief of his distress from just hearing from Maitreya. His doubts are gone, his misconceptions are gone just from hearing. He's a good student. Didn't I have to hear it 100 times, or 1,000 times? He heard it once from a very qualified person, Maitreya. And all of his doubts are gone. And so the access to that realm of devotional service is through the medium of hearing from such a qualified person. And he's recognizing that. Because remember, Vidura's been on pilgrimage. Correct? Vidura left Canto 1, Chapter 13. Vidura left, went on pilgrimage. So he's on pilgrimage. Canto 3 is he's still out there on pilgrimage. He didn't come back to Hastinapur yet. He's still out on pilgrimage. And in the course of pilgrimage, he went to many holy places. And at those holy places, he met holy men. And he heard from many holy men, many sadhus. But none of them were qualified like Maitreya. And what was Maitreya's unique qualification? He heard from Krishna directly. And he assimilated what he heard from Krishna directly. So he's on the topmost platform of devotional service. Although before that, Maitreya was not. Maitreya was a quasi-devotee. He was a devotee of sorts, more scholarly than he was a devotee. But just that association with Krishna, he became most qualified. And similarly, Vidura, after hearing from Maitreya, he becomes so qualified that he's able to deliver Dhritarashtra when he returns. He's become this topmost Vaishnava just by the same process, by hearing. So that's what his appreciation is. By hearing, which is a form of service, one is able to develop transcendental ecstasy. So in the purport of this verse, Prabhupada chooses to speak about that, developing transcendental ecstasy. The Sanskrit is rati rasaha. Rati is sometimes used interchangeably with bhava. So it indicates a state of emotion, and even particularly a state of spiritual ecstasy. Rati, rasa. So, Prabhupada explains there are five primary rasas. And the ecstasy within those primary rasas, if one can experience that, then all miseries are dissipated. Like when the light goes on, all darkness is dispelled. The sufferings are due to darkness or ignorance. And when there's light, there's no darkness. Really simple. When there's light, there's no darkness. If there's no light, there's darkness. If we forget our relationship with Krishna, and that was the root of the question, how is it possible that one can fall prey to that when he's right next to Krishna? And he also asks, Krishna is the protector of his devotee. And he's right next to his devotee, and this living entity becomes covered and suffers. How is that possible? What's going on? So we have to turn our attention to Krishna, not just be near him, or that he's near us. We turn our attention to him in devotion. And when that happens, knowledge is awakened and miseries are dispelled. So the linking process of bhakti yoga is being highlighted in a very nice way. Prabhupada writes, when one is engaged in transcendental living service of the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. It's just misplaced. The desire for happiness is natural. It's just misplaced. The desire to serve is misplaced. And we become stuck, very, very habituated and conditioned by that, although it's foreign to us. Paropi manyate anartam. Those verses in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto Bhagavatam, where Vyasa is describing his realization in trance, seeing the Lord, seeing the illusory energy behind the Lord under his control, seeing how the living entities are deluded by that potency. So he sees the liberated state, he sees the conditioned state. And in the conditioned state, what's going on? Living entities, transcendental, but loses it, loses the sense of that, and becomes bewildered. And then just as bewildering things, they further entangle them in the realm of bewilderment. Most unfortunate. And seeing that most unfortunate circumstance, Vyas knows what to do. And he does it. He compiled this transcendental literature that simply glorifies the personality of Godhead in a variety of wonderful ways. And one who takes that medicine, recognizing I have a disease, I have to address the disease, there's the right medicine. Then it's effective. It's a medicine that's meant by design to not just cover the symptoms, but take one altogether out of the diseased condition. So that's costly medicine. What we have to pay for it is we give up our material existence. But what we get is our spiritual existence. But we're largely attached to our material existence, so it's hard to pay the price. And so advancement is slow. Doesn't have to be. But commonly it's slow because we're attached. We're attached to the source of our misery. Very unfortunate. But the linking process is very attractive. And so we keep moving in that direction. And gradually make spiritual progress. Any comments or questions? You heard the question? Is it the good qualities of Vidura and the good qualities of Maitreya that enabled this nice relationship to form so quickly? Since its attachment to the spiritual master is the language used here. Maitreya is being accepted as Vidura's, although Vidura is very qualified, he's very clearly accepting Maitreya in that way. And he was prepared to accept Uddhava in that way, but Uddhava had to go. And Krishna had a different plan. So, yeah. One of the foremost qualities Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions of amongst good qualities is simplicity. And that's an interesting, what does simplicity mean? It can be understood in part from its opposite. Dishonest. Not straightforward, duplicitous, not honoring the truth. And simplicity is straightforward. A thing is what it appears to be, and you present that thing that it is. And the example that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives is Satyakama and Gotama, because it's a brahminical quality, but just being straightforward. He's a small boy. He wants to be a disciple. You know the story. Who is your okay? What is your gotra? I don't know. Okay, well, go ask your mother. The mother said, I don't know. I've been with so many men, I don't know who your father is. So Satyakama went back and said, my mother doesn't know who my father is. But she said, you can say to Gotama, my name is Satyakama Jabala. Okay, I accept you. Because you're straightforward. That's the relationship, because you're straightforward, not duplicitous. That's saying one thing, concealing another thing, and all of that business. So, part of the straightforwardness of spiritual life is, what's the purpose of it? It's not to, like, build a little kingdom in the material world. A little God project where we're trying to become, set ourselves up to be enjoyers in some way. Where there's a clear understanding and we operate that way. We want to be with Krishna. And there's sacrifices of material circumstances. Tapasya. Tapo divyam putra kayena satvam shudyat. So, yeah, they're good qualities. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.